Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to CBS News Roundup ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Coming up, stunning news from the royal family as the Princess of Wales reveals a cancer diagnosis.
We now need some time, space, and privacy.
The battle over immigration and a law giving Texas police the power to arrest and deport people.
I think Texas has a right to defend its border.
I think that there are better solutions.
In the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, the help needed for those caring for people with Alzheimer's.
Somebody there to answer their questions after they get this diagnosis. What's this all about? What do I do next?
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. Britain's Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, revealed Friday that cancer was found after her major surgery in London in January.
The tests after the operation found cancer had been present.
Here is part of the video message from Princess Kate.
In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. This, of course, came as a huge shock, and William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family.
More now from CBS's Charlie Daggett.
As far as the palace is concerned, they've given us some information. They say she's in good spirits. She's focused on her recovery. She's hugely grateful to the medical team for the care that they're providing. She now needs time, space, and privacy to complete her treatment and make a full recovery. So, as you say, we don't know which cancer or when it was diagnosed or even when the treatment began specifically. And they told us to stay away from speculation and guessing those dates. Now, as for the timing of the announcement itself, the palace told us they wanted to wait until Easter break when the children are out of school. They wanted time to reassure the children that she's going to be okay. And now they've just asked for media to refrain from chasing up further medical details and to restrain from further speculation. The family may attend church on Sunday, but for any public events, it's hard to know when Kate's going to be back or when she'll be given the green light.
CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John LaPook says he heard some encouraging news in that statement.
They went in there and they were surprised after the fact. So that's, you always want to find cancer in the earliest stages. They went in there to do whatever procedure they were going to do, and they knew it was going to be some prolonged recovery. And in there, when presumably they were able to take a good look, they didn't see any evidence of cancer. And it was only afterwards, when I guess there maybe was an examination of a specimen, a surgical specimen, that they said, oh, there's some cancer here. So since you always want to find cancer in the earliest stages, whatever kind of cancer it is, to me that was a sort of a relatively good piece of news.
Turning now to Texas, where there's controversy over an immigration law that is in legal limbo. It allows the state's law enforcement to arrest and deport people suspected of being migrants who cross the border illegally. The Biden administration says it breaks federal law, but Texas says it has the right to defend its border. CBS News immigration reporter Camilo Montoya Galvez got the first sit-down interview with Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens in English since he took the top job and began by asking,
do you need policy changes to address this crisis at the border?
I think we need to take a look at the asylum laws and make it where only people that have a legitimate claim can claim asylum. I think that we need to be able to enforce the immigration laws that are on the books and hold people accountable whenever they choose to break the laws. I think that...
You're talking about tougher policies.
Yes. Simply to deter the desire to come across at a point other than the port of entry. If there's no motivation to do it the right way, and the right way is causing people to have to wait a little bit longer, well, naturally they're going to choose to come between the ports of entry. We need to take that off the table and make sure everybody's coming through the front door, through the port of entry, and that allows us to get back out to the business of securing the border.
The state of Texas right now is asking federal courts to allow it to enforce a law known as SB 4. I'm sure you're familiar with it, mm-hmm. which would allow the state to arrest migrants on criminal charges and to order them to go back to Mexico. Would that law make the situation worse or better?
So we'll have to see what the courts decide on it, right? I will tell you, it's not going to stop us from doing our job. I'll tell you that, especially in Texas, there's no better partner for the Border Patrol than the Texas Department of Public Safety. We have worked hand in hand with that agency for as long as I've been around, and I don't see that ever stopping. They have always been very good at complementing our mission. They back us up when we're out in the field, and we do for them as well. So whatever the laws are that they're going to be enforcing, our mission remains constant. Their mission remains constant. And at the ground level, I don't see it ever changing where we're going to be there to work together to make sure that we keep the communities and our country safe.
The three surviving members of World War II's Ghost Army received the highest congressional honor this week.
Mr. Bernie Bluestein, Mr. John Christman, and Mr. Seymour Nussenbaum.
Three Americans whose military careers existed in the shadows were honored in the light of Emancipation Hall on Capitol Hill Thursday. They were members of World War II's Ghost Army.
These soldiers included technicians and artists from around the country, and they used their talents to deceive and divert the Nazis.
The 1,100-strong Ghost Army used phantom forces, phony tanks, even sound effects to trick the enemy. They also staged psychological operations.
They would plant themselves and have conversations in hotels or in cafes to deceive the enemy.
Their actions ultimately made way for the Allied invasion of Normandy.
Without their heroism, an estimated 15 to 30,000 American soldiers would not have made it home from World War II.
Nearly 80 years after D-Day, Seymour Nussenbaum, Bernie Bluestein, and John Christman received the Congressional Gold Medal on behalf of the entire Ghost Army.
I'm very proud and happy to be here to receive this honor.
Many members preserved the secrecy of their unit for decades. Willie James Inman, CBS News, Washington.
Another honor for a musical superstar.
One more release, no matter how.
Elton John and his songwriting partner of more than 50 years, Bernie Taupin, were presented with the Gershwin Prize for Popular Song by the Library of Congress.
Thank you for this incredible honor.
Everything I have written emanates from the American Songbook, which is the fountainhead. Thank you.
The 70-somethings were honored with a tribute concert with performances by Maren Morris, Metallica, Annie Lennox, and Brandi Carlile. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
One note from Russia late Friday afternoon. At least 40 people were killed and more than 100 were wounded in an attack at a Moscow concert hall. Coming up, the lead in the water problem for another big city. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out, to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. There's a disturbing new study out estimating that in Chicago, nearly 70% of children under the age of 6 are exposed to drinking water contaminated by lead. It's the latest city dealing with this dangerous problem.
Danger lurking in Chicago's drinking water, according to a new study that used AI to estimate lead levels in unfiltered tap water over a 7-year period. Benjamin Nguyen is the study's lead researcher.
You know, the goal is to have zero lead in water at all. And we know from the science that even small amounts of lead in the water can have an impact on your child.
Black and Hispanic children are more likely to be affected and less likely to have their household water tested, according to the study estimation.
I don't think we need to be alarmist. It's not as bad as the Flint crisis. Your kid's not going to be hospitalized from the levels of lead that we're seeing, but even these low levels of lead, these are things that can affect your child without you noticing.
Lead in drinking water is a nationwide issue. Children in Flint, Michigan were found to have learning delays after the lead water crisis began there 10 years ago. Chicago's Department of Water Management told CBS News it has an issue with the study's methodology, saying its results only indicated whether there is a lead service line, not routine exposure. Chicago environmental advocate Shakina Perry is calling on the city to immediately replace lead water pipes.
So not only is this a public health crisis, but it's also an environmental justice issue. And so when you look at it through that lens, that should create a sense of urgency to say that we can't wait any longer.
The Biden administration has vowed to remove all lead pipes nationwide. Here in Chicago, the Department of Water Management says it's already introduced programs to remove the city's 400,000 lead service lines, and it offers residents with free water testing. Charlie DeMar, CBS News, Chicago.
In a case that sounds like it happened in the 1960s rather than in 2023, a federal judge in Mississippi this week sentenced six white former police officers to prison for the torture and sexual abuse of two black men. CBS's Jim Crisula.
They called themselves the Goon Squad. They were six rogue members of the Rankin County Sheriff's Department, now former deputies, who are facing prison sentences ranging from 10 to 40 years. The six pleaded guilty last fall to various federal charges after they admitted to the racist torture of two black men outside Jackson, Mississippi in January of last year. Eddie Parker is one of the victims.
They had badges, they had creeds, they had taken their oaths, you know. They had responsibilities. They had lives that only, you know, were affected by every action.
The then deputies broke into a house without a warrant after a neighbor complained that the black men were staying with a white woman. Lawyer Trent Walker represents the two black men.
The wheels of justice that have ground so slowly for generations are speeding up, and we are seeing coming to fruition justice. The Rankin County Sheriff's Department has acted as a machine that has ground people up and spit them out, many times unjustly.
The hours-long torture by the Goon Squad members included beatings, waterboarding, repeated uses of stun guns, and assaults with a sex toy before one of the victims was shot in the mouth. Civil rights lawyer Malik Shabazz says the victims wanted
justice from the federal courts here in Mississippi against police brutality and police torture. Justice and relief for the residents of Mississippi. Justice against racist violence under the color of law. Justice. What did we come here for?
Justice.
What did we come here for?
Justice.
And when are we getting it?
Now.
And when are we getting it?
Now.
The sentencings of the former Rankin County deputies may not be the end of the story.
We still want accountability and transparency from Sheriff Bailey. We intend to get that. So we want him to take accountability for what part he has played in all of this, as he is the leader of all of his department. So he has a much greater level of accountability than the gentlemen who were here getting sentenced.
Angela English is president of the Rankin County, Mississippi, NAACP. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
Tens of millions of Americans are flocking to the roads and airports as the first big travel season of 2024 roars into high gear. No plans yet? There are still deals for that last-minute getaway.
The TSA says so far checkpoints are 6% busier than last year's record pace.
The key to getting a good deal is being flexible on dates and destinations this late in the game.
Lindsay Schwimmer from airfare tracker Hopper says warm weather destinations are the top picks for spring breakers. And there are still deals to be found, like New York to Cancun for $250 round trip, Chicago to Dublin for under $500, and L.A. to Fort Lauderdale for around 140.
If you're eyeing Miami, maybe skip some of the more crowded beach destinations. Consider a Fort Myers, a Tampa, a Fort Lauderdale. That's going to help you save a little bit more, and you'll avoid the crowds.
It depends where the deals are.
Travel expert Emily Kaufman, known as the Travel Mom, says there are several ways families can stretch their budgets.
Most spring breakers are planning to fly, but it might be cheaper to take a cruise.
Cruises are a terrific value because the closer we get to the departure time, the less the price becomes.
Kaufman says bundling lodging and travel together can also save you money, but don't forget.
Look inside your wallet. See what membership cards you have there. AARP has great deals. AAA has great deals. Your teachers union, being part of the military, first responders, all of them get travel perks and benefits you might not realize you have.
And hopefully leave you more money to enjoy your spring break. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Nearly everyone is excited about the upcoming solar eclipse, but what about those with vision challenges? KENS-TV reporter Henry Ramos tells us about a cool new device.
Listen to the sounds that something is happening. And the noise is coming from this.
So this is a box called Light Sounds.
Lindsay Fuller is the UTSA Eclipse Project Manager. She is with the Department of Physics and Astronomy.
A total solar eclipse is something that's really visual. And so for somebody who can't see, then they're able to experience an eclipse in a way that's a little bit different.
An astronomer at Harvard University helped develop the Light Sound Project.
She came up with the concept of these boxes so that people who are blind and low vision can also experience eclipses.
UTSA researchers, staff, and students are helping with the project. They made about 30 of these devices. This device is the size of a phone. The inside is a circuit board.
I think it took me 3 hours to make my box.
There is a place to connect headphones or a speaker, then the sound will come out. So how will it work?
So as the moon begins to move in front of the sun, the intensity of light from the sun decreases and the tone output from the box gets a little bit deeper.
Fuller says after totality and the light increases, it is a different sound.
The importance of this project is having everybody be able to experience the eclipse in some way.
Coming up, the generational dial turning overseas. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup,
I'm Allison Keys.
SOS USA!
That's protesters in Tel Aviv chanting for help with the release of hostages as Secretary of State Antony Blinken met Friday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. This is Russia and China block a U.S.-sponsored United Nations resolution calling for an immediate and sustained ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war that has raged since the terror attack on Israel October 7th. The measure was meant to protect civilians in Gaza and allow humanitarian aid to more than 2 million, some of whom are already starving.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Tel Aviv for 40 minutes Friday to offer alternatives to a planned invasion of Rafah.
A major ground operation there would mean more civilian deaths. It would worsen the humanitarian crisis. There is a better way to deal with the threat, the ongoing threat posed by Hamas.
Netanyahu says Israel will move forward even without U.S. support. More than 1 million displaced Palestinians are sheltering in Rafah. Israel says Hamas operatives are among them. Israel has also returned to the north in areas once thought to be cleared of Hamas fighters.
Many Hamas terrorist operatives and senior ones have been hiding in the hospital.
Gaza's largest hospital is again under fire. In 5 days of fighting, Israeli defense forces have killed more than 140 fighters and arrested 650 more. The U.S., Qatar, and Egypt are reporting progress on a 6-week ceasefire and hostage deal between Israel and Hamas.
And I urge all council members to vote yes.
But a U.S.-proposed immediate and sustained ceasefire failed to pass the 15-member U.N. Security Council Friday, with Russia and China objecting. Natalie Brand, CBS News, Washington.
The United Nations says more than 33,000 people have fled Haiti's capital over the past 2 weeks as turmoil over the nation's leadership continues and gangs run rampant, attacking and sometimes killing people in the streets. Some have traveled to the southern part of the nation, but other Haitians are trapped in Port-au-Prince. CBS's Manuel Bojorquez has been speaking to Americans who have been evacuated to the Dominican Republic.
They have to register with the State Department to say, I am a U.S. passport holder, I'm interested in one of these flights, and then they get an email about the timing and a pickup location. The really complicated part for many people, though, is getting to that pickup location because the streets are so dangerous. We spoke with one woman who arrived. She's from Orlando, lives there with her two children, Haitian-American woman, but her husband, their father, he is not a U.S. citizen. She was visiting him in Port-au-Prince and then couldn't get out. So she was on one of these evacuation flights, dealing with the pain of leaving him behind in that situation.
One man made history this week in both Britain and the EU. CBS's Vicky Barker reports from London.
Vaughan Gething.
This was the moment Vaughan Gething became leader of the Labour Party in semi-autonomous Wales. And by extension, this British lawyer born in Zambia to a Welsh father and a Zambian mother became Wales's first minister and the first black leader in Europe.
Today, we turn a page in the book of our nation's history. A history that we write together, not just because I have the honour of becoming the first black leader in any European country, but because a generational dial has jumped too.
By that, Gething meant he's of the generation that's only known Welsh autonomy. But modernity, he said at his swearing in, did not mean there won't still be
abuse on social media, racist tropes disguised with polite language, people questioning my motives, and yes, they will still question or deny my nationality.
Questioning and accusing him of, quote, playing the race card.
To those people, I say once more, it is very easy not to care about identity when your own has never once been questioned or held you back.
And this. Signing off in Welsh. In England, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is a Hindu of Indian extraction. Scotland's Humza Yousaf, a Muslim of Pakistani extraction. Northern Ireland's Michelle O'Neill, a Catholic woman. With Gething's appointment, none of Britain's four nations is led by a white Anglican male. That generational dial is turning. For the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Days after marking 11 years as head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis is out with his first autobiography, looking back over 87 years and the events that shaped his life.
Cari fratelli e sorelle.
His urgent calls for peace come from the pulpit, where he also regularly pushes for respecting migrants and the environment. And now Pope Francis is revealing another side, the pontiff as a man. In a new memoir, the 87-year-old chronicles his life through major historic events, his joy at the end of World War II,
sweet the rewards of peace,
and cheering the fall of the Berlin Wall. But he also delves into the more intimate, being briefly, quote, dazzled by a woman. So enamored, he writes, it was difficult to pray.
Where are you, Fabio? Holy Father, I am at the beach.
Pope Francis is on the other end of the line asking you this?
Yeah.
Co-author Fabio Marchese Ragona, a Vatican correspondent for the Italian TV channel Mediaset, certainly saw the personal side of this pontiff through hours of interviews and revisions.
È stata una mia proposta.
It was my pitch, Ragona told us. I said there are many people in the world who don't know him, especially in the States.
Why was America such a focus?
It's a great country.
Conservative Catholics in the U.S. are among the chief critics of this more progressive pope.
He says at one point in the book that if he tried to keep track of everything that people say and write about him, that he would never have time to do anything else and would also need a psychologist.
Father Sam Sawyer is a Jesuit like Pope Francis and editor of the Catholic magazine America.
What are the headlines that stand out to you from this book?
He talks about his experience from his viewpoint of Pope Benedict's resignation, of the conclave that elected him.
Despite the resignation of his predecessor and health concerns, Ragona says the Pope only thinks about resignation because journalists ask about it.
He said, I'm good right now. I don't think a resignation.
In the book, Francis reveals that during hospital stays and medical treatments, he knows others speculate about the next conclave and another pope. "Relax, it's human," he writes. "There's nothing shocking about it." Seth Doane, CBS News, Rome.
No matter who says it.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
You know it's true, especially on your special day.
Instead of tweeting at Mark Hamill, here's something new you can do on Star Wars Day. Lucasfilms announced they'll celebrate the 25th anniversary of The Phantom Menace with a theatrical release. You'll be able to see all 9 films that comprise the Skywalker saga in theaters on the big screen. And there's a special bonus. You'll get a sneak peek into the new Disney Plus series, The Acolyte. Of course, this all happens on May 4th, as in, May the 4th be with you. Cooper Lawrence, CBS News.
Coming up in the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, the challenges for caregivers of those with dementia. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Welcome to the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, where every week we discuss issues including race. This time we're talking about the growing number of people with Alzheimer's and other dementias and the challenges facing those who care for them, including dealing with a complex maze of medical providers, coordinating appointments, and getting help taking a break. One disturbing finding was that only about half of the caregivers surveyed have ever spoken with a healthcare professional about making their way through the healthcare system or asked for aid with dementia care. It's a problem that can have deep ramifications for people living with dementia and those at their side. Sam Fazio, Senior Director of Quality Care at the Alzheimer's Association, joins us to break down their latest report and how many more are suffering with this condition.
Yes, the Alzheimer's Association Facts and Figures report showed us that, Alzheimer's disease continues to be a big public health crisis. And it's significantly impacting individuals, families, and our nation. And 6.9 million Americans currently have Alzheimer's disease over the age of 65. And if we look at the costs associated with that, it's about $360 billion, which is $15 billion more than just last year.
Wow. The thing that struck me the most about this report is how stressful taking care of someone with dementia is. And the one statistic, more than 11 million family and other caregivers providing 18 billion hours of unpaid help? How much is that a week?
I don't know exactly how much that's a week, but, like you said, the amount of time that families are spending caring for somebody is incredibly high, and it increases over time. You know, as you may know, this disease is a long disease, and caregivers are in it for the long haul. And as people progress in the disease, the caregiving gets a lot more intensive. So the stressors that we found out in the survey were really 70% of folks talked about coordinating care as mm-hmm. being the most difficult stressor.
And the cost isn't a great thing either.
No, right behind coordinating care cost.
I'm curious, who are caregivers today? Is it mostly women? Is it men? Is it families? Is it everyone?
Yeah, I mean, caregiving really touches our whole society, but, women typically spend a bit more time caregiving than men. But as we mentioned, the disease is such an intense disease that it really touches everyone.
I also noticed that your report says that Black and Hispanic caregivers manage care on a daily basis more than white caregivers do. Any idea why that is?
I think, as we look at who's caring Who's playing the caregiver role? You know, I think a lot of it has to do with cultures, family history, and structure. And it looks like, you know, Black Americans, Hispanic Americans are really spending more time playing that role based on their cultures.
Okay. Let's talk about the what you call a complex maze of a caregiving, right? Because you talked about coordinating with multiple doctors. What else are caregivers having to contend with and trying to keep up with their loved ones or friends?
Yeah, so in the report, we surveyed healthcare workers and family members. And so it's interesting to see these takeaways from both perspectives. And, you know, 60% of healthcare workers told us that the healthcare system really isn't able to help people living with the disease and their caregivers navigate dementia care. It's really not equipped for that. But then at the same time, the vast majority of our caregivers told us that they want and they need help navigating this complex disease and the complex systems that go along with that. And some of those things include, you know, just making doctor's appointments with multiple doctors, finding local community resources like support groups or education programs or respite. And then lastly, and probably most importantly, is really just somebody there to answer their questions after they get this diagnosis. What's this all about? What do I do next?
I'm going to come back to the help for caregivers in a moment, but I'm curious because the healthcare workers say that there's not a clearly defined process for coordination. What do they need to be doing more of?
Now, if we look at our survey, healthcare workers said that 60% of them said that the system isn't equipped, you know, and then when we dig a little bit deeper, we can see that folks say that it's not helping patients. The system really isn't helping patients, that staff don't have enough time. You know, we know that there's a workforce issue across the country, but how can we build a system that allows somebody to have time? And so if we look at other types of professionals, so not nurses and doctors, but what about social workers or somebody else who could play that navigator role and make that time to help people? Because what people are asking for is typically not medical help, but more non-medical help. So how can we help people get what they need when they want it?
But if there's no way to navigate the health system, that's got to have some serious ramifications for those particularly who are just showing early signs of dementia, right? What other things could be a problem?
Well, if we think of navigating the system, so a couple things. If people are starting to show early signs, we would want them to go ahead and be diagnosed, right? So that they could benefit from current treatments that are available. And then after you get the diagnosis, then some people say, what do I do next? What am I confused? So can these navigators then be available for folks right after diagnosis to really help them navigate that system and know what to do next?
You were talking about community systems for caregivers who just need somebody to listen, right? Or somewhere to be where they're not in the midst of all of that chaos. What kind of things would help them deal with their issues?
If we look at care navigation, the history behind care navigation, it really started in the oncology world. And they really found that a care coordination type system could help improve outcomes and reduce costs and lessen caregiver stress. And since Alzheimer's disease is such a complex disease, we feel like navigation like this can really it could really benefit dementia caregivers. It could really help them with things like coordinating doctor visits or juggling multiple different types of doctors, finding local respite, and then really just answering questions and helping folks find the way. I mean, anecdotally, we're told from folks, you know, I get a diagnosis and then I'm just sent away. So I have to figure out what to do next and where to go. And that's overwhelming.
I'm curious because I know that there are some people that don't quite know what's ahead for them in these shoes. Do you have any suggestions for people that are just starting into this and they're thinking, oh, this isn't me yet. My mom's only 50. But people should be thinking about this now, right, since it's so widespread?
Yeah, a couple things. And so, You know, we always say that if you see some sort of signs of memory loss or confusion or just things aren't the same in your everyday sort of life, that you should definitely go and see a doctor and make sure that something's not going on that is reversible. You know, there are plenty of dementias that are reversible or could be caused by medications or something else. So number one, get that diagnosis and as early as possible, because you know, now with the current treatments that are available or that are in the pipelines, I mean, that's when people can really benefit the most. And then second, you know, come to the Alzheimer's Association, visit our website at alz.org. There's a caregiver center that can help you find your way, a lot of online resources. You could also call our 24/7 helpline at 800-272-3900. And the great thing about our helpline is that it's sort of twofold. There are people who could help families find local services, like when's the next support group in my area, or you could talk to a master's level clinician who could really, you know, problem solve with you through a situation that you're having right then and there.
I know people that are having trouble talking people that are suffering from dementia through that issue. I wonder if any caregivers in your survey discussed this, or if you have any insights on what kind of things people need. I mean, do they need a social worker to talk to, or, you know, somebody, something outside of the home that's not a medical appointment? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Our survey looked at the different types of services care navigation could offer. And one of those things was non-medical care. So somebody to talk to, like a social worker or a case manager, who could help them understand the disease and what to do next, but also be able to connect them to community services in their area. You know, they also did mention that they wanted help dealing with dementia-related behaviors. So when things are a little bit off or seem a little bit odd, you know, how can I help? How can I deal with that? How could I work with that?
Yeah, as I know people whose parents are yelling at them, and they know it's not them really yelling. They're just frustrated, you know?
Right. Right. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, what's happening in the environment around them, the physical environment and the social environment. Can there be too much stimulation that's causing confusion? Can you be asking them to do something they're not comfortable with? You know, so all of those types of things, by assessing all those things in the environment, both physical and social, we could think of maybe what's leading to that behavior.
That's Sam Fazio, Senior Director of Psychosocial Research at the Alzheimer's Association. Coming up, birds with better jobs than you.
The results are really noticeable.
That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keys. Some say few things are finer than flying, and one apex predator is being paid, sort of, to keep the skies clear above Oakland, California. The program is becoming more popular as more cities are looking up, but not in a good way.
All right, here we go.
Follow Adam Baz to work, and you might feel like you're stepping onto the set of a Hitchcock movie. But this isn't Hollywood. It's Oakland, California, where thousands of crows descend on the city night after night.
Crows sleep communally. We call them roosts. They can be hundreds, if not thousands, of birds.
For the last few weeks, Adam and his team of falconers have been working hand in glove with Jasper, a steely-eyed Harris's hawk, to clear out a flock of crows from Oakland's federal building.
Come on.
Unlike traditional falconry, the goal here isn't to hunt, it's to chase off nuisance birds. And while Adam insists he has nothing against crows, it's the mess they leave behind that has people crying foul.
Their droppings can be a huge problem. They can be unhygienic. Come on!
Jasper functions as a high-flying scarecrow.
So I'm going to load you up with a little piece of food here.
His favorite snack, little bits of frozen mice, which keep him full so he doesn't attack other birds. The practice, known as falconry bird abatement, has been soaring in recent years as people look for humane ways to encourage birds to sleep somewhere else.
So it was really a huge maintenance issue.
Mary Sims is the spokesperson for the federal building. She says before Jasper, the plaza was covered in bird droppings. Not anymore.
We've really seen a huge reduction in the amount of crows in the area.
At the end of the day, Adam and Jasper head home.
The results are really noticeable.
The best part, the crows are now free to take their flock party somewhere else. Itai Hodge, CBS News, Oakland, California.
There's a man out there who was thanking his lucky stars for a pig, and it's got nothing to do with them flying or with bacon. It's a breakthrough in organ transplant surgery, and it's the first successful procedure of its kind. CBS's Peter King.
For Dr. Tetsuo Kawai, it doesn't get any better than this.
It was truly the most beautiful kidney I have ever seen.
Kawai was the lead surgeon for the transplant, a pig's kidney replacing one belonging to a 62-year-old man with end-stage kidney disease. Kawai says in this case, size definitely matters.
The size of the pig kidneys was exactly the same as human kidneys.
Kawai says the kidney is working perfectly and should for at least 2 years. The surgery took place last Saturday at Massachusetts General. Doctors say the patient is doing well. Peter King, CBS News.
An Oklahoma woman is thankful, too, for getting a third chance at life. KWTV-TV's Colby Thielen.
It's a gift. Most take for granted.
Take a deep breath.
Not Taylor Stevenson.
Breathing is just, it's amazing.
But why such awareness of such a small subconscious act?
2 months ago, I was dying. Like, literally dying. I could not breathe. It felt like, you know, you're just suffocating.
You see, at 9 months, Taylor was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, a genetic condition that complicates breathing. She began going to the hospital in sixth grade.
Unfortunately, like, it just kept kind of going down faster and faster. It's time, like, we start talking about transplant.
She received her first pair of lungs in St. Louis. At the time, just 15.
And it lasted me about 4 years. And in 2019, I learned that I was in rejection.
So she pursued a second transplant and got it, this time in Dallas. But this time, it only lasted 3 years. Soon, everyday tasks became difficult, if not impossible. She knew these lungs were failing.
It was a really hard pill to swallow because, you know, at that time, I was only 25. And it's like, no, I don't want my life to end. There's just no stopping that rejection once it started. You have to just hope for the best and keep praying.
Those prayers would be answered in a way seemingly impossible.
I had never heard of a third transplant before.
Duke University had performed 12 of them. Now, to get one transplant, you have to be healthy enough to receive it, a perfect match, and make the list. But the chances of that happening three times?
Whenever they initially, like, said yes to accepting me into their program, and I just cried profusely because I was getting a third chance at life.
On January 18th, Taylor became Duke's number 13. At home now, after 6 months in North Carolina, all because someone, somewhere, made a choice in which they'd never see the outcome.
I'm forever grateful for my donors. It's truly the best gift.
A gift received in each breath, not taken for granted.
Finally, we all know music brings joy to people around the globe. Now an Art Meets Science program, using the power of creative group music, helps those who have suffered a stroke to improve their mobility and cognitive ability. CBS's Danya Backus introduces us to Strokestra, which strikes the right chords with those who need them.
At this music collaboration, every bow stroke, trombone slide, and maracas shake is associated with rehabilitation.
Since 2015, musicians from the United Kingdom's Royal Philharmonic Orchestra have conducted Strokestra,
pairing up their musicians with stroke patients and others with limited mobility to use music to help them recover.
Well, you didn't even worry or think about your pain.
87-year-old Marie Garcia recently fell and broke her arm. She's had limited mobility. But on this day, it was all about the beat.
They gave me drumsticks to pretend I was playing, and you just moved with the music. It was very, very relaxing and entertaining.
This year, the Royal Philharmonic brought the program to the U.S. It teamed up with the University of California, Irvine Health, its music students, and the Philharmonic Society of Orange County.
This is a wonderful example of applying
the power of music to a healing environment.
Dr. Lisa Gibbs is the chief of geriatric medicine and gerontology at UCI Health. She says Strokestra helps remove social and physical barriers for stroke survivors and other patients.
The brain is just a fantastic organ. We have pathways that work, maybe in a stroke, pathways that don't work, but somehow music figures out how to circumvent those.
Studies done in the UK show the program has physical, cognitive, social, and emotional benefits. At UCI, Strokestra hit the right notes of harnessing the power of music to bring joy and mobility. Donya Backus, CBS News, Orange, California.
That's it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your thoughts and story ideas to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. As always, you can find the program online on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Sarah Fishman is a technical supervisor, and Alan Pang provides production assistance. Have a great week. I'm Allison Keyes, CBS News.
If you like CBS News Roundup, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.